This is the Friday, November 18th, 2016 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Elaine Cupp. Elaine, welcome back.
Pleasure.
We're excited to have you. We are very excited because we have a lot of questions of people who are Elaine Cupp fans on Twitter.
Awesome.
And we want to kick it off here. We had a very specific question. This one is from Viking in North America, Skoll. He wants to know, how many metric tons of soybeans and corn does the U.S. export to Mexico? Same question to China. And what impact of the election going to be on those numbers?
I just want to say, first of all, that I really appreciate when I can see these questions on Twitter so that I can go do my homework, because I wouldn't have known these off the top of my head, to be honest with you. And I'm realizing now that I'm not going to give the answers to him in the format that he requested. Because it turns out, so first of all, corn to Mexico. Mexico and Japan pretty much trade places from year to year as our number one and number two corn customers. But in 2015, it's definitely Mexico is number one corn customer. So it doesn't do good things for our industry if we irritate our neighbor to the south. Specifically, it's about 600 million bushels, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's about 5% of a 15 billion bushel crop. Yeah. I mean, we really don't export as much corn as we do soybeans, which you already know, but Mexico's number one customer, and that's how much that they take from us. And don't forget ethanol, DDGs, et cetera, et cetera. So
the question would
awesome.
Be 600 million metric tons. Let's just
Not million bushels.
Million bushel, excuse me. 600 million bushel. Looking at Mexico, is there enough give in Brazil, Argentina, Ukrainian exports to meet all that, or would they be coming to the U.S. regardless, do you think?
Not last year there wasn't, and probably not this coming year. But yeah, in the future, it is possible, I suppose. But I don't know. The logistics are so nice right now. The trains that cross the border and they just go straight down to Mexico. You know, that's mm-hmm. the trade is there. The transportation is there. That's all in place. And it will be bad news if that goes away.
Yeah. I worked with a guy who had dealt with a feedlot down in Mexico in the south central part of the country that they fed something like 120,000 bulls on feed. Uncut bulls.
Interesting.
Yes, but I'm sure that was all American corn they were eating.
Yeah, exactly.
China, do you have those numbers offhand?
Yeah, it was like $10 billion worth of soybeans, so a lot. I mean,
okay.
You know, how much we
export. So that'd be a billion bushels at 10 bucks a bushel.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, a third of our crop, effectively.
Right.
So, again, bad news to irritate that customer.
But where can China go if President Trump decides to put on a large import tariff? Can they get a billion bushels from Brazil and Argentina?
I don't know. I mean, they
tomorrow?
Can get...
Tomorrow? I mean...
Not tomorrow, right. But they... Yes, absolutely. We would lose market share to Brazil, Argentina. And longer term, we would lose it to more local or more easily accessible markets to China, like your Ukraine, Russia sort
sure.
of region.
Makes sense. All right. Next question, Elaine Cupp, from our buddy Phil up in Ontario, Canada. Ties right into what we were discussing. Will Russia and Ukraine corn production in 2017 and beyond increasingly replace U.S. corn in some markets?
I'm sure that Phil is referring to this exact phenomenon, the suspicion that U.S. might not be such a favorable trading partner for certain Asian countries in the future. And that has always been the long-term sort of concern, or the long-term goal, the stated long-term
yes.
goal of Russia and China is to build that agricultural conduit for these products to move that way. And it hasn't happened really yet, and it's probably not going to happen in 2017, but absolutely that is the long-term goal.
The capacity is
yeah.
there.
Agriculturally, the
right.
capacity is absolutely there. The land is available. Could be done.
In order to get it done, looking out beyond 2017, 2018, what's going to be more important? Is it capital that they're lacking? Is it political stability? Or is it some other factor? Is it just knowledge?
So on Paul's M2M podcast this week, I kind of talked about that I have traveled around to various places, but I have not traveled around there. So I have not witnessed it firsthand, but my understanding is the lack of investment, right? And perhaps some manpower. How are you going? You'd have to get somebody to invest that capital to make it happen, because the land is there, but you just need to get out there and till it and plant it and make it happen.
Okay, so it sounds like we need to start a GoFundMe to send Elaine to Russia and the Ukraine
yeah.
to write about these issues.
Yeah.
Hopefully somebody's taking notes at home. We can get that going for you. Third question, going back to something we discussed on the show, Roger in Nebraska and Phil in Ontario are both asking about the dollar. Roger is wondering if the interest rate does go up in December, which you'd mentioned on the show, the value of the dollar could go up. Where are exports going? And then Phil wants to know, how much higher can the dollar go? What are you watching as a top in this market?
Well, you know, we don't know where you'd put a top on it. We've broken through the previous 13-year high. So if this is attracting sort of technical traders that are looking at this as a trend, we've broken through that level. We've triggered their activity. They're probably just going to continue to churn this rally higher. Till when, I don't know. And the problem is, so Roger alluded to the interest rate rise. I think the interest rate rise might be a trigger to take your profits and let the dollar go back down. But that's not the only reason that the dollar is going up, probably, right? It's probably also going up as a safe haven. There's a bunch of money moving around right now for a number of reasons. And it's probably also going up with some expectation of federal spending in 2017. That's just a tautology that if you put more money into the economy, there will be more money in the economy. Like whether going into the deficit by trillions of dollars is the way to do it. You know, some people, we'll see what Congress decides to do with this. But anyway, so there is certainly potential for the dollar to continue to go higher even after the interest rate rise.
Because if we look back on a 30-year chart of the dollar, we topped out in the mid-120s, didn't we, in the late 90s?
If you say so. I remember looking
at that not too long ago.
That dollar index, it's not units. It's not
right.
It's not a real anything. So it's not a very tangible quantity. And so there's no good ceiling on it.
Sure. Yeah. We think of par 100 as a ceiling, but it's not. It's just a number. You mentioned money just moving around, kind of scattershot, especially post-election. BJ in South Dakota, BJ Richter on Twitter, is asking, what's happening with the falling 10-year notes, looking at treasuries, and their money flow effect between commodities and the equity markets?
Well, I have to confess to BJ that I don't actually pay a lot of attention to bond trading, so I'll take his word for that. Take his word on that. But so there's money, as BJ's saying, there's money coming out of there. There's money coming out of commodities in China right now. China's been cracking down on speculators. So there's a bunch of billions of dollars of cash that has to go somewhere, hopefully into their stock markets, but maybe also into their residential real estate, which would then start to get bubbly, which could trigger all kinds of problems. So there's Saudi Arabian money, there's all kinds of money that needs to park somewhere and get invested somewhere. And we have not seen it coming into the commodities this past week. The commitments of traders indicated that folks were selling off long positions and taking on new short positions. So I don't think it's been going into commodities recently, but it certainly could. There's a lot of money flowing around, and it could come into commodities.
It could, and one of the trends that people have been really, really jazzed about over the past week is this Dow. This equity market in the U.S. just continues to steamroll higher. Elaine, at what point do we get toppy? At what point do people pull a little cash out of there as a safe haven and roll to somewhere else?
Where would it go? Into the dollar? I mean, I think that these are the safe havens. At this point,
the Dow is the safe haven. The dollar is the safe haven.
It's not going
into gold.
Right.
That's been dropping like a stone.
Right.
And you don't think we can get them fired up about live cattle? We can't create
there
a story.
Let's try it. Let's try it. Yeah.
I've got like 30 head of feeders. If these billions of dollars need a place to go, look me up.
Good thinking.
We'll hook them up. Okay. Next question to you. This one is from Phil in Ontario. Our buddy Phil again. Thank you. Phil is wondering, are there any holes in the USDA projection? And right now they're calling for 102 million metric tons out of Brazilian soybeans that's being planted now. Is that a top-end estimate, do you think? Is that only going to come down as La Nina hits or you name it?
Well, the weather right now I think is okay. However, the private estimators down in South America that I've been reading are saying more like 100. Million metric tons rather than 102. So I think the 102 is probably high, and Phil is alluding to that. But there's not enough weather concern to see the USDA trim it yet. We'll wait and see.
Okay.
How La Nina goes. Yeah.
How are we doing? As the dollar has steamed higher, I'm assuming the real has broken. So Brazilian beans and corn continue to get cheaper?
Yeah. In fact, Brazilian beans are a 20% discount, I believe, to U.S. beans right now.
So 770 and change.
Yeah. So we are, you know, we've had such good news in exports lately, and I wonder that will start to struggle. We are seeing, I think we're starting to see some weakness in the basis, or at least steadiness in the processors, but some weakness in like the CIF bids. So I think that we're going to have to bring our prices down on the basis side to start to compete with Brazil.
Okay. Well, Elaine Cubb, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this week.
I have enjoyed it immensely.
So did we. Thanks to all of you for sending in your questions via Facebook and Twitter. Please continue to do so, and we will get expert analysis right to you. Thanks for watching, and have a great week.